Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Paul F. Tompkins is a remarkably gifted and prolific comedian, actor, and writer based in Los Angeles, California. Originally from Philadelphia, Tompkins is well known for his work as a writer and performer on Mr. Show with Bob and David, and for roles in films like There Will Be Blood and The Informant. He's also a serious contender for King of All Podcasts, as he has redefined the medium with his work on Comedy Bang Bang, the Pod F. Tomcast, the Thrilling Adventure Hour, Super Ego, Dead Authors, and Spontaneity Nation, an improv podcast he hosted and produced, which just celebrated its 200th and final episode. On Sunday, February 17th in the year 2019, Tompkins and the very talented comedic actor Mark Evan Jackson staged their production, Mr. Jackson and Mr. Tompkins, a two-gentleman improv show, at the Vogue Theater in Vancouver as part of JFL Northwest. Paul and I had a talk about this very show, this stage, this thing that I just described. We talked about that. We talked about why he has clicked with Mark Evan Jackson as a comedic partner and foil, why he ended his Spontaneity Nation podcast, what's next for him, and much more. With the support of listeners like you who subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly pledges at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Plus, in-kind support from CFRU 93.3 FM, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 458th episode of Creative Control, featuring the ingenious and always very dapper Paul F. Tompkins, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. It's snowy here. It's very snowy. I'm calling you from Ontario, Canada. It's they call it Snowmageddon. That's what they're saying in the news.
Well, I mean, that seems like an error in judgment on your part to be there.
Yeah, it's true. This really is on me, isn't it? I never thought of that.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm here and you're there.
Where are you? Where in the world are you, Paul?
I'm in Los Angeles, California, the city of dreams.
And how are things going in Los Angeles today?
So far, so good.
No major calamities in terms of climate or people. Has anything bad happened? The bright side, has anything good happened?
As far as I know, everything is status quo. I haven't really dug into the local news yet today. It's still the early afternoon here, so anything could happen. We're on the precipice of absolutely anything.
Okay, that sounds good. That's a good place to be. That sounds promising to me. How long have you actually been in Los Angeles, by the way? I associate you with Hollywood, California for some reason, but how long have you actually been there?
I moved here in 1994.
Oh, really? And what prompted a move to Los Angeles? Show business, I assume.
Well, I had stars in my eyes, and I had to have that taken care of, the only place that really knows how to do it.
And where did you move from?
From Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So I know of snow, and am happy to have left it behind.
Yeah, well, I'm familiar with the fact that you're from Philadelphia. Was that a good place to live in? Was Philadelphia good?
Yeah, I still really love the city. I get there probably every other year. I still have family and friends back there, and I still feel a very strong connection to the city. Anytime I go back home and walk around, it definitely is still home. Like as much as Los Angeles has become my home, and I can't imagine living anywhere else, really, Philadelphia will always be the home of my heart.
Oh, nice. That's nice to hear. Well, speaking of snowy places, the last time I saw you in person, you were in Toronto on stage, and you didn't make eye contact with me because I was sitting way in the back of the audience there. But it was you and Mark.
Are you sure I didn't make contact with you?
Actually, I felt a little something. You know how sometimes you get that, a little connection?
That's right. Oh, I know, because I give it.
But you and Mark Evan Jackson put on one of the most incredible things I have ever seen at a comedy festival or anywhere. I shouldn't have qualified it by saying comedy festival. That kind of shortchanged it, but it was really a phenomenal performance, if I might say. Do you remember the performance I'm speaking of in Toronto?
Oh, yeah. That night, because we had never done a two-man show before like that, and from the moment we walked down on the stage, we both felt right at home. It was one of the, I'm going to say, top five experiences I've ever had on stage in my entire career. It was magical for us. We just had the best time, and it was the most amazing audience. Everything felt right. You know, those nights are rare. I mean, you have good nights, but when it feels transcendent like that, that's the thing you're always going for. But of course, it's impossible to always reach that. But man, when you do, you really know it. You really feel it.
Well, I would say the same. As an audience member who's seen a lot of comedy, have seen a lot of improv, that's the best thing I've ever seen. Like, I don't know what else to say. And I don't know how to describe it to someone because it was also fleeting. You know what I mean? Like, it was completely improvised. You say it's in the top five, but on some level, it would be hard to qualify why unless you were there, right?
It was just that. I mean, the idea of transcendence with live shows is that connection between the performers and the audience where everyone feels like we're all feeling the same thing. We're all sharing the same experience. And so it wasn't just that we were having fun with each other or the audience was, you know, enjoying what we were doing. It was somehow we all were, we all just came together as people, as lofty as that sounds. Yeah. I mean, that's what it feels like, you know?
Yeah, it was a collective. It's like going to a Bruce Springsteen concert. That's what I hear. That's what I'll say. I felt that. I felt that at a Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band concert or seeing Jay-Z sometimes. You see someone and the whole 20,000 people feel as one. Have you ever had that, seeing something or someone?
Oh boy.
I mean, you just described your own experience, and that's all I'm saying is you don't have to dig.
Here's the thing is that I'm seldom just an audience member these days. Like I'll go to see entertainment. Like I really like to go to the theater, but it's a different kind of thing than comedy. It's not that it can't happen, but I think because I am a performer, it makes me a bad audience member a lot of the time,
yes.
You know, because it makes me think of other things. It makes me think of things that I either want to do or things that I would do differently or, you know, things that I wish I had done, you know, like, so it takes a lot for me to completely leave that stuff, to get out of my head when watching a performance. That's what I like about theater so much is that if when theater is good, that to me is the transcendence of theater, that you forget about the people around you. You forget about the exit signs. You forget about, you know, being able to maybe see into the wings a little bit or whatever are the the mundane distractions around what you're there for. And you can be transported, you know, by the people on stage and those and their fake furniture and all that stuff. It's like theater is, if you think about it, it's a tall order. And when it works, it is a truly magical thing. But live performance where there's no fourth wall, where you're talking to the audience, where you've acknowledged, hey, we're all here together, that adds another level to it. You know, you have that in music, you have that in comedy, that makes it a different thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it totally does. It totally does. And I remember that night quite vividly. I remember you and Mark, you say you and Mark had never done a two-man show like that before, but you've worked together in many other capacities, but
absolutely. So we've known each other for years, and you know, we've improvised together, certainly with other people, and we've done scenes on stage before. But just the two of us doing a show just by ourselves, and you know, wearing the tuxedos and all that stuff, like it very quickly became its own thing, you know.
Yeah, you were Mr. Tompkins and Mr. Jackson, as I recall. That was the
thing. you've changed the billing to my advantage, which I appreciate.
Right. Sorry. I apologize to Mark.
You don't have to apologize to me.
But my point is you walked out, you did a little preamble, just talking to people about a Blue Jays game you saw, as I recall. And then someone in the darkness yelled out that the word that you were going to base your work on was honesty. And that seemed impossible. And yet it was one of the most magical things I've ever seen.
Thank you. It was magical to experience. There's of course a fear that instantly sets in after the show is over that if we do this again, is there any way it can be as good? Like when you start out so strong and it just feels so comfortable and at home. But the good news is we just did a show in Detroit and it was an absolute blast. So proof of concept. This will be if we can avoid strangling ourselves somehow on stage in Vancouver, it will officially be a trend that we are good together.
So how did you first encounter Mr. Jackson? I just want to know a little bit about this relationship because it's fascinating to me that was the thing I saw was one of the first times you'd done a two-man show like that. How did you first encounter Mark?
We met doing the Thrilling Adventure Hour together, which was a long-running Los Angeles stage show and podcast that started out as a live show in a tiny little bar in Hollywood. And we first met at the first read-through of that script. It was a staged radio show. So what we would do is we would hold this, all the cast would hold the scripts in their hands and perform it like as if it were a radio show.
Yeah.
And you know, it ran for 10 years and you know, we really became a family, that whole group of people. And in fact, since the show ended, we missed each other so much that we started doing a monthly improv show at Dynasty Typewriter here in Los Angeles. So we can once again see each other every month.
Okay. And so you've worked with other people, you've worked with Mark in other capacities as well. To your mind, what distinguishes working and improvising with Mark in relation to maybe other people you've worked with, either on a one-on-one basis or in a group setting with Mark? I'm just curious about that dynamic because, like I say, and we've said a few times, the thing I saw in Toronto was explosive. It was magical, and it seems special to me that I was there in the room with. And I'm just curious about this dynamic.
I mean, Mark and I, there's a lot that we have in common. We have a love of clothing. And I mean, I think that, you know, the idea that there would be anyone else that would readily agree to do improv in tuxedos is absurd. Like, of course he agreed. I suggested and he agreed to it immediately. And, you know, we have enough differences. You know, we're both from back east, but we are a few years apart in age and experience. You know, he started improv when he was young, you know, and I got into improv late after starting with stand up and then getting into improv with the dawn of podcasting that led me to start my own improv podcast. So we have different we definitely have different levels of experience. And you know, Mark is a guy, one of the most solid improvisers that has ever been on a stage. And I learn something from him every single time I either see him or perform with him. He is absolutely one of the most solid pros you could ever hope to see on a stage. So, you know, we have a playfully antagonistic relationship at times, but you know, Mark is a really good dude. Like the fact that he started a charity, a foundation to teach improv to kids in Detroit, you know, to help them learn life skills, is that's the kind of guy that he is. You know, he is just 1,000%.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
100% professional. He is always game. He is always ready. He takes whatever is thrown at him, and he makes it great. I mean, it's really a you know, the sort of tennis partner analogy, that he elevates my game to a degree that a few other people could. You know, it's just out of like, I have to be better because he is so good.
So what kinds of discussions, you guys go to a Blue Jays game, that's 8-9 hours right there that you've got to kill. So what kind of prep are you doing before you go on stage at all? Like the experience of seeing it was someone yelled the word out, in this case it was honesty, you proceed to work together. It's magical. You know, I don't know a lot about the mechanics of improv and comedy, but I do know a little bit about freestyling and rap music. And I know that sometimes someone says they're freestyling, but it's a little prepared.
Came from the tank, and they don't want to admit it.
So are you and Mark talking conceptually about anything you might go for in the evening, or no?
If we get on the verge of it, I mean, there is a certain sense of just knowing, we'll talk about this later, you know, because we're having, especially something like that where we're having the same experience, it's like we don't need to plan anything. We know that we will be talking about this later, so we're recounting it for the audience, you know.
Yeah.
But we're not like saying, okay, I'll say this and then you say that, you know.
Right.
Or, you know, when we went to Detroit, we were on the same flight and there was a dumb little dust up with me and another passenger because a woman got on with a child and they were separated. Right. They were both in middle seats and, you know, they wanted to switch. And this guy across the aisle from me, who's in an aisle seat, said, he just flat out said no. And then he added, she'll be all right. She looks like a big girl. And that made me so mad.
Yeah.
It made me so mad that I instantly volunteered. And then the flight started. And so we talked about it a little bit as soon as we got off the plane. And I said, you know what? I want to save it for tonight. We should save it for tonight.
Right.
And we'll talk about it then. And, you know, it's like the only prep that you can really do for something like that is have a day, you know, have an experience, have stuff to talk about. Either there's stuff we can talk about together, or we can come together and talk about our separate days.
Yeah.
You know, just make sure that you have something that's going to be entertaining and provide fodder for the improv.
So did the show that you said, I believe you said you just did a show in Detroit, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Did anything get replicated from the show I would have seen in Toronto?
No, nothing.
Nothing. And how did it go? Was it as magical? Can you if you A-B those two shows, was Detroit as magical as Toronto?
It came pretty close, I got to say. I mean, nothing's ever going to be as magical as the very first time, because that energy is unlike anything else. But it was you'll pardon my language, it was a fucking great show. It was it was so much fun. The audience was with us, and we had a blast, you know.
Yeah.
I think that this is a, you know, we're both excited that we enjoy working with each other. This is a simple thing that we can do. You know, if we want to travel around and if we maybe get to the point where we've done a few shows, we want to do like a little tour or something.
Yeah.
It would be extremely simple to do. And we get to wear formal wear.
Yes, I was going to ask. You always make very interesting sartorial choices. You suggested the tuxedos. Why? Why the tuxedos in this case?
Well, for that first show, we were playing a big house in Toronto, and I thought, you know what, we should really do this up. We should lean into the idea that we're both, you know, dapper Dans. You know,
yes,
we both like to dress up. So why don't we go all the way? And it sort of, you know, we came up with the name of the show first, and it sort of fit. You know, and it I think it definitely fits our what has become very quickly our co-brand. You know,
yeah.
And it also it's not a thing that you see other people doing.
No, absolutely.
If any two dudes were going to wear tuxedos to do improv, it's me and Mark.
Now, you've talked a little bit about your process here in this conversation. Are there aspects of improv that you feel are, I don't know, misunderstood, mischaracterized by audience members, maybe your colleagues? Do you feel like that's still a thing, that people are just don't get it or think it's one thing when it's not?
Oh, sure. Well, there's a lot of people that flat out refuse to believe that it's made up. You know, there's a lot of people that assume that you secretly plan things out, that nobody could do that. And, you know, the thing that makes it work, and I will say that I can understand that point of view because sometimes things come out perfectly, you know, and that's when you're lucky. That's when you're comfortable enough that you can take the time to phrase things in such a way that it sounds like a perfectly written joke, you know, but it's not. It's just what makes that happen is experience, you know?
Yeah.
And so I get it. But if you look at all the other stuff, it's like, well, why would we have all that other stuff not be as good as the perfectly formed jokes?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like what makes it magical is that it's meant to be ephemeral. So of course it's all made up, because that is absolutely the point. And, you know, the idea that, you know, I think it's Second City maybe does where they improvise to write sketches. So they have improv, and they also have written sketches that they perform. And the idea is that improv is an important part of that writing process. And so we could, like, if we recorded these shows, we could pick out the best stuff, edit it, rewrite it, you know, and do it. But it just wouldn't, I don't think it would be the same. I think they would be, I think it would be mildly funny if you put it in wardrobe, put it on a set, and put cameras in front of it. I just think it would be a different thing. The magic of improv is that. So I think that is an ongoing thing.
Well, I think, you know, I hear what you're saying. I do think that the realization that it's ephemeral, that it's happening in the moment, is present in the audience reaction, in the laughter, in the way we process it. Like, that's part of what we're processing, is like, holy Lord, they just made that up. Like, that's kind of that's the subtext a little bit, I think.
Well, absolutely. We're all just, what I love about improv so much is that we are all discovering it at roughly the same time. And the performers are maybe what, a half second ahead of the audience? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
There's very little lag time. You know, I think of a thing and I say it, and then the audience is laughing at it, and it all happened in a second.
Yeah,
you know, that's the magic. That's the magic right there.
Well, as we're speaking, it's somewhat and rather sad news, frankly. You just ended another podcast that you started. You have a tendency to start podcasts that people love, and then you stop them. And the one that just ended is an improv podcast called Spontanation. I can never say this right. It's like a weird thing, but
you are not alone. You're
okay,
not alone.
Spont, I believe I can call it Spont, is one thing some people call it. You just
I accept that affectionate nickname.
Why did you end Spontanation?
Well, I'd never done a weekly podcast before Spontanation. The other podcasts that I had produced, self-produced, were monthlies. And, you know, the Pod F Tompcast, which was my first podcast, that involved a lot of production, a lot of post-production. It was a lot of work for me and Evan Schletter, my producer and accompanist. And so we got to the point where it was just too much work to keep going.
Yeah.
We had other stuff, you know, it was not our career. We weren't making any money from it. And then the Dead Authors podcast, which I was doing as a sort of charity show at UCB Franklin here in Los Angeles, you know, they gave me a time slot, an early time slot, so that I could donate all the proceeds to charity to A26LA, which is a reading, tutoring, mentoring program that's across the country.
Right.
And that the podcast would raise awareness of A26. And then that got to be tricky because I had other stuff going on and I had to book the show. I had to do research and I had to do it at this sort of odd hour of the day. And that got to be a little much after a while, mm-hmm. especially after I started doing Spontanea Nation. When that started, even though performing the show was a breeze and was always fun, I always enjoyed that hour in the studio with whoever was in there.
Yep.
But to have to book everybody and, you know, get the show out on a weekly basis, you know, it required booking 4 people per episode, 5 if you count Evan Schletter, who also has his own career. And, you know, although he was getting some money to be there in the studio, it's still not enough to make it his first priority. You know, I mean, he was there he was there for all but maybe 4 episodes or something like that he scored later. That's remarkable, considering all the stuff that he's always got going on. Yeah. So after years of doing that, having never had a regular show like that before, the format of it started to take its toll, you know, the production of it. And although I still enjoyed improvising with everybody, it just felt like it was time to do something new. And, 200 seemed like a nice round number. And yeah. So I thought I'll end it there. And, that's a lot of episodes. And, you know, I thought, you know, I'll take some time to figure out what my next thing is going to be. And that's where I am now, is trying to think what I want to do next.
Okay. So you don't know what your next move is.
No, I have some ideas of things to do with friends, and we'll do more, episodes of Freedom, the podcast I do with Scott Aukerman and Lauren Lapkus. But I definitely want to host another show. I just don't know what I want the format to be yet.
Okay. Well, Paul, my understanding is we have to go, you've got another, chat to have, but I just want to say it's an honor to get to have spoken with you. I'm a huge fan, and thank you for your work on Twitter, if I might say. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your Twitter service, Paul. It's great to see that as well. If people want to learn more about you, where would you like to send them?
They can go to paulfthompkins.com, and I will have, you know, dumb things that I post up there, and that's where you can also find out my live dates.
Okay. Paul, thank you so much for this time, and best of luck with everything going forward.
Thank you, Vish. It was great to talk with you.
Very special thanks again to Paul F. Tompkins. The great, the ingenious Paul F. Tompkins was on the show. It was a short episode. We don't normally have episodes this short, but it was still fun. I enjoyed it. I learned things. Thank you very much, Paul, for being on this, the 458th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and available on all iOS and Android platforms, and also on things like Spotify and YouTube and Audio Boom as well. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it on one of those platforms, and Or if you want to learn more about me, sign up for my regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my website, vishkhanna.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or follow me at vishkhanna. You can also listen to a radio show version of Creative Control on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at cfru.ca, or on an actual radio at 93.3 FM if you're in or near Guelph. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep the podcast going. We have a very modest Patreon. We're hoping it expands rapidly sometime soon. Just like out of nowhere, it just goes nuts and sustains the show for all eternity. But as it stands, it isn't doing that. If you'd like to contribute to the show financially, as I say, it's a flexible monthly way you can do it. Just go to patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, Planet Bean Coffee, and Granddad's Donuts for their in-kind support of the show. Also, my dear friend Jim Guthrie, he lets me use the instrumental version of his song, The Rest Is Yet to Come, to end the show each week. And I appreciate that. Go to jimguthrie.org to learn more about Jim. And thank you very much for listening to this episode and any other episodes you feel compelled to listen to. And if you can, tell your friends about the show as well. And why not subscribe to the podcast so you can stay on top of things? Why not? Why not indeed? All right, I have to go. I will talk to you very, very soon. Goodbye for now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.